So you do this case for Christ, case for Creator, all these books trying to prove or talking about the, you know, the logic behind it.
Yeah.
As it's titled, the case for Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
But do you find for people seeking, I mean, they ask for logic, they ask for facts, they ask for statistics, and that's what they're trying to use to disprove it.
Mm.
But regardless of how many facts and statistics and proof you give them, they still don't accept it. Do you find they're seeking for something more?
Well, yeah, I think there's lots of different seekers. There are people who are investigating sincerely, you know, with an open heart and an open mind, who really want to find the truth and are open to evidence from history and science, or are open to logic and arguments. But, you know, there's a lot of dynamics that go on in someone who's not a Christian. I can say that because I wasn't for most of my life when I was an atheist. For instance, there are psychological factors that people aren't even aware of that drive the way in which they seek. There was a study done by Paul Vitz of New York University, who's a psychologist. He found he studied all the famous atheists of history, and he found a common denominator. Now, he looked at Nietzsche and Sartre and Camus and right down the line, Marx and so forth, Freud. And the commonality was that all of them had a father who either died when they were young or who they had a terrible relationship with their father, or their father had abandoned their family when they were young. And so this sets up a dynamic where why would you want to authentically find a heavenly father when your earthly father has so disappointed you? Mm-hmm. I found that in my own life. I didn't realize at the time. I thought I was kind of an open-minded seeker investigating the evidence, and yet I had a terrible relationship with my father. I mean, he once looked me in the eye and said, "I don't have enough love for you to fill my little finger." So we had a tough relationship, and I think that was a dynamic that helped drive me to atheism. Now, I would have told you it's all intellectual, it's all based on facts, and that's why I became an atheist, because you can't believe Christianity. But there's other psychological dynamics that go on as well. So people seek for different reasons. People are running from God for different reasons, and I think we need a variety of ways we can reach out to them. Not everybody responds to my kind of a book, you know, although ironically, I remember when I was writing The Case for Christ, and I was interviewing a famous scholar, and during a break in the interview, he said, "You know, nobody's going to read your book." I said, "Why not?" And he says, "Well, this is a postmodern world. You know, young people don't care about facts and evidence and historical data and all this stuff. They don't care about it." And I remember going home and saying, "Nobody's going to read my book. I'm so depressed," you know. And yet, ironically, when the book was published, the single biggest group of people who've contacted me saying they came to faith in Jesus Christ through my book were 16 through 24-year-olds, postmoderns. So what's going on? I think it's the way in which the material is presented. It's a story. You know, it's not just an encyclopedia of facts. It's a true story about a guy. Here is my life as an atheist. Here's why I began to investigate the evidence. Here's the evidence I found convincing. Here's how I responded to it. Here's how my life changed. It's really my testimony with the evidence slotted in. And God's used that to reach people who you would think would not be interested in that kind of stuff.
So people came to you and talked about, you know, this isn't relevant to today's generation.
Yeah.
And then it ended up that it was,
right,
because of how it was delivered.
Yeah.
So what do you think is to be said? Is the truth almost as important as how it's delivered?
Mm. Well, you know, truth doesn't change. I think, you know, I think of Ignatius, who of Antioch, who was, you know, trained by the apostles and became the bishop of Antioch, gets arrested, and he's being taken away to be executed. And he writes these seven letters in which he reaffirms the truth of Christianity. Jesus really and truly was born. He really and truly was baptized by John. He really and truly did miracles. He really and truly was crucified. He really and truly rose from the dead. I mean, he reaffirmed these things and went to his death, consequently, with courage, because he knew that as Jesus returned from the dead, so he would too. So I think we have to cling to that truth. I think our proclamation of the gospel must always be based on the absolute truth of the Christian faith. But how we communicate it, I think, changes from era to era. I think it was different in the first century than it is in the 21st century. And that's okay, as long as the truth is we may keep that intact. I think we can use different methodologies to deliver it. What I'm seeing today, two things that I think are very powerful in terms of reaching young people with the gospel and with the evidence for the faith. One is story, the use of stories, to be able to talk about real-life stories of real-life people who met a real-life Jesus and changed their lives in real ways. I think those are powerful. But secondly, to get into a conversation, to get into a dialogue, One of the phenomena that's sweeping the world right now is what are called seeker small groups. The Alpha program uses this and others, where you get together, a couple of Christians with half a dozen non-believers, and you dialogue. You build a relationship. You get together once a week. You go through your toughest questions. You wrestle with these things. And the role of the Christian is not to preach. It's to befriend and to listen to and authenticate the spiritual journey of the non-believers and to bring gently a Christian perspective and so. And we see so many people coming to faith through that mechanism because it's not just facts and data in a raw, sterile form. It's relational. There's a friendship. There's caring there. And people respond to that. And I think that sense of community is an important element in reaching young people, especially with the gospel today.
Is that one of the most destructive things in this day and age, is that people are discounting who the real Jesus is? Is that why you did this?
I did it because with the proliferation of attacks on the historical Jesus on the internet, college classrooms, best-selling books, and so forth, movies, documentaries, the Talpia Tomb documentary, it's raised questions about who the real Jesus is. Is he merely another human being who we have deified ourselves? Are we all gods like he was, as a lot of New Agers will claim? Or is he really unique? Is he the one and only Son of God? And so I did that book because as I interact with people, they raise these issues. Wow, I read this book by Richard Dawkins, and he said such and such. How do you respond to that? Or, on the internet, one of the biggest claims being made now is that Christianity ripped off all of its essential beliefs about the resurrection, the virgin birth, and so forth from previous mythology. It's a very popular claim. Well, it's full of holes. It doesn't hold up withstand scrutiny, but it's devastated the faith for a lot of people. So I took those that I thought were the most damaging and the most, most commonly presented. And I traveled 24,000 miles to sit down with scholars and say, hey, you know, what is the other side? And I was quite willing, if they didn't have an answer, to walk away and say, well, you know, I got to go someplace else to find an answer because they're not equipped. But you know what? These scholars really are able to provide, I think, credible and persuasive answers.
So now, with all the research that you've done, I'm curious, are you satisfied with all the answers that you've found, or are there still some lingering questions that you have?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Every once in a while, you'll come across something, an objection to Christianity, one of these new books by these atheists or whatever, that'll raise a point. You go, ooh, I don't know how to answer that. I don't know the answer to that. So my response, as someone trained in journalism, is, well, I'll go investigate it. And so I do. In my new book, The Case for the Real Jesus, I took half a dozen of the major objections that troubled me and trouble a lot of people, and I sought out scholars, and I asked them the toughest questions I could. And you know what? When I do that, invariably I find their answers. You know, just like the proverb says, you know, when you hear a case presented in court, it can be very persuasive, but then the cross-examination begins. And, you know, when you hear the other side, often you say, well, there is another side to this. Good example, Bart Ehrman's book. You know, Bart Ehrman, the Christian become agnostic, who wrote the book Misquoting Jesus, that challenges the credibility of the New Testament. I got emails from a lot of people saying, this has devastated my faith. Mm-hmm. I read it and I thought, well, there's some big challenges here. But I went and I interviewed Daniel B. Wallace, who's every bit the scholar of Bart Ehrman, and found the other side of the story. And when I did that, I thought, you know what? The evidence nevertheless points powerfully and persuasively toward the truth of Christianity.